From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly podcast on all things politics. I'm John Myers from KQED, and Anthony York, the intelligent, thoughtful editor of Capital Weekly, is also here, as always. Before we started, Anthony was drawing a great big veto message on his coffee cup.
Yes, I'm vetoing my coffee. In the spirit of the week.
In the spirit of the week of vetoes. So obviously this was the week that we finally, I guess we're wrapped up. The whole session, the whole world of the state capitol is almost over now, at least what happens under the Capitol dome.
And 3 million bills were vetoed this week.
it felt like it. At least that was the clamoring. So yeah, so the governor had his deadline. He had to either sign or veto bills. He had, what's the official number for 2008? 1,187 bills made it to his desk. Of those, 415 were vetoed for a veto rate of about 35%, which was largest number he's ever vetoed, and even beyond that, right? Largest, since Reagan?
Yeah, certainly more than Duke Majan. Was it Reagan?
Yeah, I think Reagan I saw was. Another fine news organization calculate that back. And of the 415 vetoes, 136 were given the blanket veto message, which we'll talk about in a moment. Well, that's a side discussion. But so 415 vetoes, just for some context, last year he had 214 vetoes. So that's more than almost double of what he had in 2000.
But a lot more bills this year. I mean, this was the end of the 2-year session. A lot more bills on his desk than last year.
All right, so big picture, what do we make of the is there a way to read the tea leaves, do you think, of just the vetoes in general before we start beating to death particular bills? I mean, is there anything to say here? I mean, I still think that if you back up and you look at Schwarzenegger on the whole, he's still somewhere in the middle. He's still somewhere charting his course between the left and the right to his own little drummer of how he views all of these different proposals.
I think that's right. I think a lot of the new fee bills got the axe, But it what makes it difficult is that, you know, a lot of bills that seemed kind of innocuous that you would think would be no-brainers in normal years to be signed ended up getting vetoed. So it's hard to find a good theory that runs all the way through. I think there are a lot of different factors. I think there's some residual anger from the budget standoff and the lack of cooperation between the legislature and the governor's office. I think that there are some real disagreements inside the governor's office. We saw the day after the bill signing was complete, the governor replaced his cabinet secretary. I think that there were some internal divisions that maybe manifest and ended up with some surprised legislators, some folks who I've talked to who at least are telling me, you know, publicly that they were surprised by the veto, whether that's real or somewhat political.
Well, I was going to say, you may get that from members of the legislature, but have you gotten that from internally, from inside the powers of be of the executive branch?
Yeah, from some staff, too. Not within the executive staff. I mean, there's never uniformity inside the horseshoe, and especially this governor, this administration. I think this governor prides himself on having a politically diverse staff, ideologically diverse staff. And there were a lot of divisions. Some of them were personal. Some of them were ideological. How that translated into which bills got signed and vetoed, you know, it's hard to know without having been in the room.
Well, before we start parsing out the different subject matter, let's talk about the point I brought up a moment ago, the blanket veto. So this past week, the governor issued a number of vetoes, as I said, 136, that had a simple message on them, a boilerplate message that said, due to the late historic budget crisis, and all of these things, I didn't have a lot of time, and so I'm only signing bills that are the, quote, highest priority, unquote, for California.
Like no texting while driving.
And I was going to say, but it does beg the question, what is the highest priority? I mean, that is a subjective term, right, exactly, what the governor cares about versus what others care about. But, you know, trying to understand what the blanket veto message meant, you know, I mean, the layman's reading of that is I ran out of time. I didn't have enough time to consider all these. So rather than take a chance, I'm just vetoing them. And I tried to ask the governor what he meant, you know, what his criteria was for highest priority too at an event signing one bill. And he said, well, I didn't have a lot of time, but then I looked at all of them, which I thought was kind of contradictory. And his office came back and said later that It wasn't he didn't have time to look at them. These are ones he would have opposed anyway. He just didn't have time to write a detailed veto message, which I'm still somewhat confused about because some of them don't seem at all controversial. And one that, well, Anthony and I talked about this morning on KQED's public radio program forum.
www.kqed.org/forum.
So it feels like we've kind of had this discussion. But this one I just can't get past. AB 2479 was a technical change to a new law about labeling water bottles. It was something he signed into law last year, and this was a technical change, and he vetoed it with the blanket veto message.
Who is the author? Does it say that?
Struggling, I believe. Could it be Corbett? Because Corbett was the author of the original bill.
No.
But it passed with almost no opposition. And so it begs the question, did he really always oppose that? That really feels like I ran out of time or something. I mean, I'm baffled somewhat by the blanket veto.
Yeah, and I don't have a whole lot of insight into that. I mean, you know, the fact that the bills were held at the desk for 3 weeks into September,
right,
until the budget deal was passed.
Held at the desk because the governor said, I'm going to veto bills if there's no budget, and
right,
no one wanted their bill on his desk with that threat out there.
Right. But, you know, to use that as an excuse is a little disingenuous. I mean, look, the fact that the bill is physically gets to his desk I don't think makes a heck of a lot of difference. You know, there are good records about which bills are being held at the assembly desk, which bills are coming down, and the governor has a very efficient, very capable legislative unit headed by Chris Kahn, the legislative secretary.
Who are watching all of these bills through the process.
And listening to all of these podcasts. But that's exactly, I mean, they knew what was coming.
Right.
You know, so while the bills may not have physically been transmitted until mid to late September, it's not like these were a total surprise. I don't know that it had any real impact. Now, politically, it's a good excuse, especially if there is a measure of retribution in some of these vetoes. I don't know. You'd have to ask the governor's office on that. But certainly some people have speculated that there is something perhaps personal and or political in some of these vetoes.
And even if there's not, the perception that there is, I would be surprised if the governor's office really was upset that that perception was out there, because it only adds to his power. It only adds to the notion,
sure,
that he still wields power for a man who's in the last 2 years of his time in office.
Well, sure, and why not pick on the kid with a 15% approval rating on the playground?
Yeah. The legislature.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the governor's going to lose any points with the voters of California by dissing the legislature. The legislature is not popular, and they're half as popular as the governor. The governor himself is not terribly popular, according to recent polls. But as unpopular as the governor may be, the legislature is less so. So I think as the governor moves into campaign mode, we can talk about how this may or may not fit in with the Proposition 11 campaign on redistricting.
Right.
I think that the governor is, in some ways, heading into November to running against the legislature in a lot of ways.
Making a point that the legislature is dysfunctional. That's why we need to change redistricting and vote yes on Prop 11.
Right.
All right. So since it's easy or since we probably spend a lot of time looking at what he vetoed and drawing messages out of that, let's first talk about what he signed and what is noteworthy out of what he signed. What do you think is noteworthy out of what he signed?
I think the big bill of the year is probably SB 375, the Daryl Steinberg
anti-sprawl bill.
Right. It's essentially the land use portion of AB 32, the sweeping overall greenhouse gas emissions bill that will set in motion a set of greenhouse gas reduction targets for the state. I believe that the Air Resources Board is coming out with their final plan tomorrow.
Friday.
Oh, right.
Right.
Not tomorrow. Right. Excuse me.
If you listen to this podcast on Friday, it came out today.
Right.
If you listen to it on Saturday, it came out yesterday. We clearly don't know what's in
it. And
if
today were Thursday when we were recording this, hypothetically, it would be tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right. But no one will hear this till tomorrow.
Oh.
Anyway, but I digress. Boy, we've really gotten ourselves in a time-space continuum here. But the Steinberg bill that you're talking about is the bill that basically encourages more development in urban areas and not sprawl out to suburban areas,
right,
therefore theoretically less driving and commuting, therefore less greenhouse gases, therefore some way at getting toward these reductions right. that California is shooting for.
It's what's known as smart growth, having a more comprehensive approach to urban planning, regional right. planning, incorporating development projects with transportation projects, and using a carrot and stick approach. Any projects that are developed outside of this framework are going to lose eligibility for state and federal transportation dollars. And that's a huge, huge incentive to get some of these developers in line. Developers, as part of this deal, got some relief from the California Environmental Quality Act.
Part of the negotiation to getting the bill out.
Right. And the enviros gave up some on CEQA in order to hopefully to get a more thoughtful approach to urban planning and reduction in vehicle miles traveled.
You know, the only thing that surprises me about this bill is that its fate was in doubt there as to whether or not he would sign it. I mean, you know, there was all this discussion that up until the 11th hour, would he sign it, would he veto it? And yet it seems custom made for the national persona of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the green Republican, right. to go and campaign or, you know, promote on and say, look what California's doing. So I'm somewhat surprised that it was in doubt for so long.
Well, and ultimately, I think that probably was the decisive factor. How this fits into the global image and the national and international political image of Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think is very important. Now, this, I believe, like AB 32, on the greenhouse gas issue, it's the one issue where the governor's consistently at odds with the business community in the state, the California Chamber of Commerce. I believe, I don't know, on the final version, correct me if I'm wrong on this, was opposed to AB 32.
Yeah, the chamber still thought it was a job killer bill. This was the one bill that the governor went differently from the Chamber of Commerce on.
Right.
He agreed with them on all the rest. Everything else was.
One big bill that was vetoed, you know, we could talk about the port. Container fee bill,
but on this, which was a pro-environmental bill, said the environmental groups. But on this one, he sided with the environmental groups against the business community, or at least the chamber, in
right.
a sense.
And it is that sort of, you know, the governor charting, even on the greenhouse gas issue, perhaps charting some sort of middle ground. And certainly for a Republican governor, you know, I think you can make the case that his environmental record, while perhaps not perfect, is significantly different than, say, his two Republican predecessors, Pete Wilson and George right. Duke Manchin.
Also on the list of bills that the governor signed into law here toward the end was one that I think was it's almost like a, okay, I'll do it bill, which I think was an appropriation of money, of bond money that the voters have already approved for water projects. A bill authored by Don Parada, the outgoing president pro tem of the Senate, about $842 million in bond money
probably
can be appropriated for levee fixes and protection of the Delta and other water supply and reliability things, et cetera, right. et cetera. And it was long stuck because the governor wanted this new, brand new, larger water bond
right.
and didn't want to do this, wanted that instead, didn't get that by the end of the legislative session, and so said, okay, finally, I'll do it. Great, I'll sign it. Of
right.
course, the irony to that is with the credit crunch on Wall Street right now, these bonds are not being sold.
Right.
Bill Lockyer said right. that to one of my colleagues at KQED yesterday. This bond money has no takers right now because of the credit crunch on Wall Street. I mean, of course, we think that'll change. But for right now,
the House Republicans, as of yeah, this recording, the House Republicans were seemed to be a bit ambivalent about the new bailout bill.
But suffice it to say, going back to the issue for California, I mean, so now you've got money theoretically going out the door sooner rather than later on some of these water issues.
Right.
Doesn't mean water is over, though. I mean, the governor still wants a larger water bond on a ballot, maybe even a special election ballot next year.
Right. And I do think that that at least in the Senate, there's some agreement. Dave Cogdill, the Republican leader, and Daryl Steinberg, the incoming Senate leader, are, I think, close, I believe, to cutting some sort of water bond deal. There's been a lot of talk about how to proceed, whether a water bond could get through the legislature, particularly through the Assembly. Some thought that Cogdill might work with the Chamber of Commerce to get something on the ballot through the initiative process, signature gathering. But I think that Steinberg is optimistic that the legislature can get a water bond on the ballot perhaps next year.
Well, and I want to digress from the signings and vetoes for a moment to say that there is one reading of the California Constitution that says the legislature cannot place a bond measure on a special election ballot.
Now, I've gotten clearance from the Secretary of State on this
Have
on
you?
This very
ah,
issue.
An update.
And that if the special election is in June, then it can happen. That it would be considered a general election. It would be okay in June. Now, I mean, I'd heard that same thing. Uh-huh. I asked the Secretary of State's office. Apparently,
wow,
if the special is in June, which is it's rumored to be in June to vote on the lottery bond and
all the
budget reform proposals,
part of the budget deal would have to go before the voters. And we think that would happen in June. So in other words, okay, so you could get a water bond on the deal on the ballot.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, so water's not dead, but the governor signed this particular one that appropriates water bond money already approved by the voters. Other ones that I think that are, we'll just mention a couple of them quickly. You know, some of them have gotten lots of headlines. We don't need to talk about menu, you know, calories on menus of chain restaurants, no texting while you're driving, which really kind of screws up your ability to use your Trio when you're...
When I'm driving my go-kart down the sidewalk, yes.
Exactly. you know, and there are a few others. I mean, one of the ones we haven't talked about much lately that was the subject of a lot of lobbying was a ban on certain kinds of gambling machines for charitable organizations, machines that the tribes and others argued played like slot machines. And so the charity organization said they're going to lose a ton of money. Charities are not going to get what they need. The tribe said they're totally illegal. They violate the gambling compacts that the tribes have with the state. And the governor signed that one. So no more for the charities of those machines.
Right. And that I don't know if that's olive branch to the tribes or what that is. But, you know, there were powerful forces who were interested in getting those machines out. And now they're gone.
All right. So let's talk about the vetoes quickly. What stands out in your mind of vetoes?
Well, we alluded to the container fee bill.
Yeah, which was an environmental bill, which would have assessed a new fee on containers coming into the ports of Oakland and Los Angeles, or Long Beach, I should say.
Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Oakland. Yeah, yeah, all three. And would have raised about $400 million a year, would have allowed those local port authorities to sell up to $5 billion in revenue bonds for congestion relief and cleaning up the air in
and around
the ports.
Governor basically vetoed it, saying it was bad for the economy at this point. I mean, that's effectively what he said.
Right. It would have been a new, essentially, import and export tax on any goods moving through those three ports.
And then also in the environment, he vetoed a bill by the Pro Tem Don Parada for a new climate change institute that would have been created at the University of California.
Right. And this is something that we'd written about for months.
Capital Weekly.
At capitalweekly.net, capital with an O. and frankly, you know, I was a little surprised to see, because I thought that the governor was pushing for this. This would have given the Public Utilities Commission the ability to, well, the Public Utilities Commission already has the ability to raise taxes on investor-owned utilities, ratepayers, PG&E, Edison. If you pay your electricity through them, your rates would have gone up. Also at the municipal utilities, those rates would have gone up as well. And it would have set aside about $500 million over 10 years for greenhouse gas research. Would have been established at the University of California.
Would have made this new institute the lead on climate change research.
It would have been the one and only place for state-funded research. Currently, there's some research going on under the auspices of and jurisdiction of the Energy Commission. Would have closed up that operation, moved everything to this new institute.
That was one of the controversial elements, which might have tip the scales.
Yeah. And this was something that was pushed for very strongly by Michael Peavy, who was the former president of the Public Utilities Commission. Peavy has a very close political relationship with Susan Kennedy, the governor's chief of staff. And that's why, frankly, a lot of people who we talked to thought that this one was being fast-tracked and was going to be signed. But the governor, surprisingly to some, at the last moment, decided to veto the bill.
Do you think this is one of those that goes to that issue of, different camps of people inside the Schwarzenegger administration?
I do. And because I know that there was some pushback from the Energy Commission on this. I don't know how strongly Susan Kennedy was pushing for this bill. But the governor, in his veto message, said he wanted to wait until the roadmap, the AB 32 roadmap, was released from the Air Resources Board, and that is being released this week. So keep a lookout. If you're looking for what to look for in 2009, I think that the concept of this institute will come back.
All right, other vetoes that we know that have been talked about a lot in the news. Some of the things that Democrats wanted on the reform of the mortgage industry,
right.
You know, they thought that the most significant reform of helping people who were getting bad deals on their mortgages, the governor vetoed for various reasons. There's a whole lot of stuff on health care, which I'm going to ask you to summarize, Anthony, because you spent a lot of time covering this, where effectively it seemed like the message from the Schwarzenegger administration was, well, this is too piecemeal. I wanted major reform last year. I'm not going to sign bits and pieces of this. Take it back. Let's do it differently.
Right. And a lot of the pieces that ended up on the governor's desk were components of the bill that died in the Senate Health Committee back in January, ABX1, which was sponsored or supported by the governor. It was considered the governor's bill, along with former Speaker Fabian Nunez. And it died in Senate Health back in January after clearing the assembly. A couple of key components of that bill, including one that would have required HMOs to spend 85% of their revenues on benefits for patients. That was in the governor's plan.
That was vetoed and out of the bill, right?
Yeah, Sheila Kuehl had a standalone bill on that particular issue. It was vetoed. An issue dealing with balanced billing, where this is a practice where if an HMO says that they're not going to cover a particular practice, sometimes doctors get stuck with the bill and send those bills on to patients directly. This would have ensured that doctors get reimbursed for those costs, and so and the governor vetoed that. And then a big bill on healthcare rescission that was authored by Hector De La Torre, a Democrat of Southgate, which would have required HMOs to go through some sort of review process before they cancel somebody's insurance. Right now, HMOs have the power unilaterally just to cancel your insurance, not only cancel it, but cancel it retroactively, right. and without any sort of review at all.
So he vetoed those, which were all things that were in the mix during his year of healthcare reform that went down in flames.
Right.
And then, of course, he vetoed the now familiar single-payer healthcare bill, Senate Bill 840 by Sheila Kuehl, which has been run to his desk now three times?
Yeah, just to be vetoed, I think.
Just to be vetoed, yeah. And so, I mean, it seems like a lot of the anger about Schwarzenegger vetoes this week has been about healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really been the focus of a lot of anger about what's he doing? It's going to hurt people. You know, why won't he support this part of it, even though we don't get the whole package? And, of course, the pushback from the governor's veto messages was, I'm not doing it piecemeal.
Well, and there was some little stuff. There was a bill, AB2, by Merv Dimely, which was considered to be a small but important bill. There were about 1,000 people who are currently now without health coverage who are very sick, very expensive to insure, that are essentially uninsurable on the open market. It's too expensive to insure them. And there's a state program, which is known as Mr. MIB. Mr. MIP is the program.
Acronym us to death.
Yeah, well, there'll be a link to it on the website, right?
Not so fast.
But it's essentially a program for these high-risk individuals who are expensive to insure. There's a shared risk pool. But there are 1,000 people who are outside of that program because the program is full. This would have extended coverage just to those 1,000 people who are today currently.
And that was vetoed.
That was a surprise to a lot of people. And, you know, there were so a lot of the big ticket items like the balance billing, the medical loss ratio that we talked about, the 85% thing, the rescission, those were vetoed, but a lot of small bills as well.
So I mean, it would seem like to me that given that there's so much animosity about health care at the end of this week and where everybody stands, doesn't that make it harder to come back in 2009 and reinvigorate the negotiations over health care and substantive health care reform?
Oh, absolutely.
Because now you really have hardened the battle lines, it seems like.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was a lot of personal – I think there was a lot of carryover. I mean, I spoke to Senator Kuehl this week, who is the author of the medical loss ratio bill.
And soon to be termed out.
Right, and she's leaving. And she, you know, essentially accused the governor of throwing a temper tantrum. She thinks that there is a personal component to some of these vetoes, that the governor blames Senator Parada and Senator Kuehl for the demise of his health care bill, and that this was payback. Talking to a lot of the advocates, I think there's going to be a lot more focus next year on the federal level with a new president coming in. Both John McCain and Barack Obama have talked about the need for health care reform. And I think that you're going to see a lot of the focus that was directed here. You saw the Service Employees Union, the head of the International, focusing on California. They made a big push to get health care done in California this year. that's failed, and I think that a lot of that energy is going to be redirected towards Washington next year.
Quickly, I want to say that, you know, one of the other interesting things about vetoes, we alluded to it a moment ago, was this notion that there's several bills that have been vetoed, and the legislature returns them, and he vetoes them, and they send them back, and he vetoes them over and over and over. We talked about single-payer health care, which, again, you know, people who send him that bill believe in it passionately. It's not that they're doing it just for the political, you know, fun of it all, but, I mean, they believe in it. Another one, driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, went back to his desk, back to veto. In-state tuition for undocumented immigrants went to his desk, back to the veto bin. So these things kind of come back and back and back again. One bill, though, that I find really interesting that was part of the budget fracas that I don't think has been talked about a lot so far. I got a little bit of news coverage because for those of you who aren't following this, you know, we got the final batch of veto messages at 10:30, I think, on the night 30th. Of the 30th. And, you know, so basically all the newspapers had gone to bed. Some of us broadcast geeks had signed off for the night, whatever.
And I was up YouTubing Sarah Palin clips.
Which is your avocation and not your vocation.
That's right.
But one of the bills that came across at the very 11th hour was AB 1526, which really doesn't mean anything by its bill number, but it was one of the bills that was in the package of the quote-unquote budget deal that was struck and approved, you know, at the final end of the legislature to get the budget enacted. And it was a modification to Proposition 49. Prop 49, if you don't remember, was the governor's entry into California politics in 2002, the after-school initiative, providing funding for after-school programs. Well, the bill said that the funding mechanism in Prop 49 was not working and that the legislature now needed authority to fund after-school programs as it saw fit, not using some autopilot formula, which was in Prop 49. Okay. Now, we thought that was part of the budget deal, and that was an agreed thing, and we were all going to say, well, I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger had to decide that ultimately his initiative didn't work, and that there are limits to the initiative process. No, 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 no. On the final list of vetoes was AB 1526, with the governor's veto message essentially saying, you know, these programs work, and nope, I'm not going to do it, and gone. And so, and what I think is interesting about that, too, about next year, Prop 49 is somewhere around $500 million worth of spending that basically is automated and mandated and required. And that's a budget pressure for next year now, I would think.
And I think that there will be a bill to at least suspend it, if not permanently, at least for the 1 year next year, given the crunch. The governor has agreed to suspension of Prop 49 in the past on a temporary basis, but apparently was not willing to let it go
permanently. Yeah.
So.
Even though it is the kind of autopilot spending that he seems to have decried in speeches at other times, that, you know, autopilot spending approved by the voters. But it's
this is different, though. It's his.
It's his. Yeah. There you have it. So so given all that, now that we're done with this lovely year of the legislature and the year at the Capitol, we are going to shift into election mode, I guess, at some point, which we won't belabor now because we've been on this podcast for a while.
Or back into budget mode.
Or back into budget mode, I would suppose. Yeah. But a lot of reporters are going to be sifting through campaign finance documents. We'll talk about those next week. We're going to get some new data on that. But just as an early little bit of campaignish, campaign-like money, in other words, political money.
Right.
Mr. York, you wrote about a little bit more clarity we have on some money that goes to help the governor spread his message of hope, joy. What his message?
Peace, prosperity.
Peace, prosperity. But anyway.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of after-school programs.
Talk briefly about what we learned this week.
Well, we learned some of the donors to the California State Protocol Foundation. This is a 501c3, a nonprofit that was set up to, its stated mission is to promote California as a beacon of all that is good and, you know, smells good and tastes good or something like
that. That's good.
Maybe that's not the stated mission, but it's something like that.
It's somewhere, it should be if it's not,
yeah.
But anyway.
This is something that is housed, is run essentially through the State Chamber of Commerce. Alan Zarenberg, the chamber president, is the president of this board. Bill Houck, who headed up the governor's performance review for the governor, is the vice president.
But this is the organization that pays for, like, the China mission trade trip, the Border Governors Conference down in Hollywood recently. I mean, it pays for all these things that kind of bring California to the world, supposedly.
Right. And now there was a new regulation passed by the Fair Political Practices Commission in June that states that any group that makes a donation to a state agency has to now – that agency has to post those gifts on their website. So I was ambling around the governor's website Wednesday morning looking for veto messages, for bill signings and veto messages, and stumbled across this form that I had never seen before. The regulation also...
That's how most of the news business works.
People dumb
don't realize,
luck.
People don't realize how much of it is just like, oh, look, here's a document.
Not only that, but nonprofits are not... When they file with the federal government, and they're not required to file the source of their funds. There are a lot of nonprofits that are involved in, you know, sort of championing liberal causes and conservative causes, and depending on what side they're on, the other side usually howls about how they don't reveal the source of their funds, and nor are they required to. But this new state regulation says that if one of these organizations makes a donation to the agency, then they have to reveal the source of those donations. So for the first time, we saw some of the groups that were giving to the State Protocol Foundation.
Were there any surprises in who these donors are vis-a-vis who normally gives money to Arnold Schwarzenegger over the years?
Well, one of the things that's clear is that these groups who gave to this foundation have business before the legislature. And, you know, they gave $180,000, were the source of $180,000 ostensibly for the Board of Governors Conference. But the groups that gave the University of Phoenix, the State Labor Council, Anheuser-Busch, these groups, it's hard to see what they have to do with the Board of Governors Conference. It's easy to see when you look at the bills that they lobbied on, the bills that were pending, the bills that were on the governor's desk. It's easy to see what their interest was, at least in currying favor with the governor. And I found it to be very revealing. A little surprised to see that the State Labor Council, not exactly known as a champion of Governor Schwarzenegger, was among those that gave, I believe, $25,000 for this thing. But you know, this foundation has raised a couple of million dollars since 2004, and this was just shining a little bit of light on the last $180,000 it had raised.
Which I think, you know, and again, you know, when the final chapter is written of Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor, I mean, you know, he is the most prolific fundraiser in the history of California governors.
Right.
Eclipsing Gray Davis, the man who was, you know, pilloried in public.
Thrown out of office.
Yeah, for campaign fundraising.
Essentially.
And no one can draw the complete nexus that, you know, it has some kind of drastic influence on the way that Schwarzenegger's conducted his business.
Right.
But again, it's a fuller picture of who gives him money, where the money is spent.
And the way that money finds its way into the process, whether it's through behested payments to charities, which you can also find on the FPPC site, or through groups like this. This is a 501c3, which means that... And there are no limits to the amount of money you can give to this group. And not only that, the money that you give to this group is tax deductible. Now, it can't be used for, say, the governor to campaign for Proposition 11, but it does find its way. It paid for 41 members of the governor's staff to go down to the Board of Governors Conference. The foundation says that it's saving the taxpayers money. And, you know, I guess each individual can draw their own conclusion on whether there's anything improper or unsavory about this kind of money going to a state agency.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those kind of issues where everyone sees it differently. They see the same data points and they draw different conclusions about what it means.
Right.
So and of course, none of that money goes to help people like you and me do our jobs.
No, but there'll be an address where you can do that on the website as well.
On whose website?
Yours.
My website?
And give us
our
PayPal account.
We've already done a pledge drive in public radio.
I'm talking about a personal enrichment fund.
Oh. Which we could use. Maybe we'll buy some more coffee.
Maybe.
Or Anthony's like wearing sweats in here today, you know, so maybe it's a
It's not Thursday. It's mystery day.
It's mystery day. This is laundry day. Mystery laundry day for Anthony. All right, enough of our grooming habits. That'll do it for this week. We'll be back next week. For Anthony York, I'm John Myers. See you next time.